What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the program. It is episode 391 of Not Your Average Boston Sports Podcast. I am your host, Garrett Hayden. As always, you can listen to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify, and you can follow along on Facebook and Twitter for the latest updates. Good to be back with you folks today on St. Patrick's Day. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody listening today. Got a great episode for you folks today. We got all kinds of things to get to, little, tidbits and notes from all the local teams. We also got some March Madness that we'll get into as Selection Sunday was yesterday. So we'll get into that for both the men's and the women's. Take a look at the top seeds and some matchups that might be interesting in each of the tournaments. So we will take a look at that. We'll also have a good guest Friday for you guys. Probably will be released early this week as we'll get somebody in for a tournament preview. So that will be exciting. Looking forward to that. And then we got top five for you guys later in today's podcast. So we will do that as well. So I think where we're going to start today, we're going to start with the Red Sox, talk about some spring training updates as the team is now 10 days away from the season opener in Texas. Red Sox will kick their season off against the Rangers March 27th. So we are about 10 days away from that first game. Red Sox will play a four-game series in Texas against the Rangers, and then they will have their home opener Friday, April 4th against the St. Louis Cardinals. So, for this Red Sox team, obviously, we've talked at length about the injuries to the starting rotation. And they took another hit last week as Lucas Giolito had to leave one of his starts with a hamstring issue. So, he will not be ready to start the season as he works his way back from that said issue. So, it means the Red Sox are going to be down three starting pitchers once the season starts. With Carter Crawford on the shelf with the knee injury, with Brian Baio with the shoulder soreness, and now Giolito. So, Red Sox definitely, have their work cut out for them, I think, with the back end of the rotation, having to, pick up the slack. I think the good news is, I think that there is some solid rotation depth that you can look to a guy like Richard Fitz, Cooper Criswell, just to give you some starts before the guys are ready to come back. I think that with Giolito and Bayo, I don't think that either of them are going to be out for too long, but I guess you never know. Giolito, I think, unfortunately, has had some injury issues over the last couple of years. Obviously had the elbow procedure last year, caused him to miss the entire season, and now, is not going to be able to start the year on time with the hamstring issue now. But I think you feel confident about some of the other starters. Garrett Crochet looks absolutely ready to, start opening day, was named the opening day starter last week. So I think you should be excited about him. Had another outstanding spring training start yesterday with seven strikeouts in four innings. He's working his way up. He looks great. I think that is kind of every bit the ace that the Red Sox were hoping he would be when they acquired him in the offseason. I think that there's no reason to believe that he is not going to be the frontline number one guy that you expect him to be. And, I think if he's pitching at this high level throughout the season, definitely in play for a Cy Young Award. I really wouldn't be surprised if he's a guy that puts together a elite season that I think will help this team in more ways than one. So really excited about him. I think he's a guy that is going to really truly elevate this pitching staff. And I think already it's got great depth. The depth certainly is going to be tested out of the gate for sure, with the three starters that are going to miss time. But I think just having Crochet, having Buehler, both of those new guys, I think are going to be really good additions to the rotation. I think Buehler's had some good starts as well. A guy that I think, despite him having a lot of, injury issues in the past, his stuff is electric. He's a guy that just is a competitor, and I think I really like that about him. Really, just a guy that's going to go out there and compete, play with a swagger, and I think you really need that. You really need a guy that's going to come in with kind of that competitive fire. So really excited to see what he can do. Tanner Houck, I think his spring has been a little bit uneven, but I think you expect him to be, also a really key member of this rotation, a number two or a number three guy. It is, so funny that you think about Crochet and like how dominant we expect him to be this season. You forget that Houck was an all-star last year. So, I think if he's able to tap into that level of performance again, I think you're looking at a top three in a rotation that could be, I think one of the best 1-2-3 punches in baseball, not just the American League. And then you even factor in a guy like Bayo, a guy like Giolito that I think can slot into your rotation more naturally. That I think the Red Sox had slotted Bayo into basically that number one spot last season. And, I think to this point in his career, may not be ready for that. And so I think you slot him in more naturally where he's kind of at this point more of a number three or a number four rather than a number one or a number two. And I think that that is going to help kind of give this team more depth on, there's way more depth in this rotation than there was last season, and you're not having to count on guys that, are making their major league debuts or have barely made any starts. I think that you have, you definitely have more depth in this rotation. So I think even despite the injuries, you should be pretty confident about this team pitching wise to start the year. Obviously you hope that those three guys can come back and come back in a timely manner. I think just given the schedule out of the gate, the Red Sox are going to be playing a lot of games. So, it'd be interesting to see. I think, Fitz especially, you saw him pitch pretty well at the end of last year. So I think gives you some confidence that, okay, maybe he can build off of that and see, where he slots into this rotation. But I think if, your one, two, and three is Crochet, Houck, and Buehler, I think you can feel pretty good about that. So good news is I think you feel good about those guys. I also think moving over to kind of talking about the position players, it is revealed, I think it was talked about last week, that Rafael Devers has basically said that he's willing to do anything to help the team, which I don't know. For me, it didn't really come as a surprise. Always kind of thought that that was going to happen, which that's why I kind of felt like all the conversation about the press conference that he had a couple of weeks ago was kind of overblown, because I just felt like at the end of the day, he and the team, or he's going to realize what's best for him and what's best for the team. And I kind of was not really concerned that anything was going to come of it, but I think it is, good that I think he realizes that this is likely kind of the best move for him to possibly slide in to be more of a guy that's going to play DH or hit as a DH. I think just will help the team defensively with, Bregman likely moving to third or staying at third, and then you keep Story at shortstop. Casas will be at first base. Does seem like David Hamilton is kind of in the lead to be that opening day second baseman, which, I think you would have liked Christian Campbell or Vaughn Grissom to have a slightly better spring training than they've had. But it is good to see David Hamilton having a good spring. And I think he's a guy that definitely gives you a different element in terms of his speed and how effective that can be. So I really liked, watching that element of his game last season, that it seemed like Sure had his struggles in the field, was pretty versatile playing shortstop and second base, but can really change the game with his speed on the base path. So it does kind of seem like he's got the inside track to be the everyday second baseman. The Red Sox are also trying to work Willie Abreu back into the team after his gastrointestinal issue. It seems like they think that he'll be close to being ready for opening day. So, you know, that's at least a positive that you can feel good about him coming back. And I think, you know, really not a whole lot of questions about this particular roster. You know, I think catching, definitely you have some questions there as, you know, Connor Wong's the everyday guy, but who's going to be that backup? Red Sox have brought in a couple of different guys in the offseason, Blake Sable, Carlos Navarez, Sebi Zavala, brought in a couple of catchers to, you know, I think hopefully try to shore things up defensively, but not a lot of those guys have a lot of experience. So, you know, that's kind of one area that I think could be a concern, that you maybe don't have a lot of depth there. You know, I also think in the bullpen, it's kind of been a bit of a shaky spring, but, you know, then again, I think bullpens are pretty volatile just in general. So, you know, spring training numbers may not be, you know, indicative of how the, you know, how it comes together. You know, I think the performance, you know, I think is going to be something you want to watch, you know, and check on the statuses of, you know, Hendricks and Chapman and some of the other guys that are going to be, you know, key to that bullpen, Justin Slayton, Garrett Whitlock. You know, I think, as always, you know, you kind of take spring training performances with a grain of salt, and, you know, you just kind of hope that things get figured out. You know, there is a lot of experience, which I think is a good thing, but I do think that, you know, you want to make sure that guys are at their best and they're consistent, because, you know, I think clearly this team has made improvements to the starting rotation, and I think clearly they are going to be much better in that regard this season. But I do think, like, if the bullpen is not good enough and has a lot of issues and can't hold leads, you know, that's going to kind of be what could derail this season. I expect that this team should win close to 90 games. I think given the news about Gerrit Cole and the Yankees and the injuries that they have, I really don't think there's any excuse for this team not to be challenging to win the division. You know, Baltimore certainly is going to be really good. Red Sox will be battling with them all season, but it's like they really have a tremendous opportunity to get back into, you know, serious contention in this division and in the American League. And really, I do think that the bullpen is really the only area that I could see becoming a problem that could be something that brings them down. You know, you hope not. You hope that, you know, there's enough experience in there with, you know, Chapman and Hendricks and Garrett Whitlock, but it's just, it's an area that I think if there's not good enough effectiveness, you know, it could be something that brings the team down. You know, I hope it doesn't, but, you know, we'll see. But I think there's reasons to be excited for sure. You know, definitely there are going to be question marks, as there always is with a lot of different teams around this time. But I think, you know, possible that you see this team really surprise and really have a good season. You know, I think if guys are able to stay healthy, if Story and Casas are, you know, guys that are regulars in your lineup, I think that you have a chance to be a really special offensive team. So that's a positive. You know, I think that, you know, just kind of check on the progress of certain guys in the next couple of days. But, you know, I think that spring is, you know, basically over at this point. You know, maybe just have a couple more games, limited time for certain guys to kind of make an impact. But I do think that, like, this is the majority of what you've seen and kind of what you should Or this is like the majority of what you've seen from certain guys, and you're kind of like, okay, should be ready for the season. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. We'll definitely have like a Red Sox season preview come out at some point as we get closer to the start of the season. But yeah, hard to believe season starts March 27th, which is pretty early. So, definitely a season to be excited about for sure. So I think we're going to move on, talk some Celtics. Kind of an interesting weekend for the Celtics. Not their best game Saturday in Brooklyn. I would say that they kind of did not really play their best. It was kind of a helter-skelter kind of game. Celtics were, in control for a lot of the game, but Brooklyn was able to keep the game close or make the game close down the stretch. Celtics gave up a lot of offensive rebounds in this game, and I really think that was the reason why Brooklyn was able to hang around. Not a lot of well-known players on the Brooklyn Nets, I'll say that. Watching that game Saturday, there were a lot of guys that I had to kind of a lot of guys that I honestly didn't know who they were. But I don't think it was the best game for the Celtics. I know that they didn't, have a lot of turnovers in this game, but it just felt like they just were not really totally locked in. And it's understandable. It's second of a back-to-back. They're playing in Brooklyn, a place that's kind of hard to get motivated to play in. The Nets are terrible. I don't know, that arena just really doesn't, it's hard to get motivated playing in that arena, I think. But it was good to see Porzingis come back. He had missed 8 games, so it was good to see him back in the lineup, have a really good game. On the interior, didn't shoot the ball well from three, was 1 for 7. Celtics actually really didn't shoot well from three in this entire game. It really was Pritchard and Hauser that were a combined 8 for 14, and everybody else was 5 for 24. So obviously, those were really the only two guys that were able to make shots from three. Tatum had 20 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists. Didn't shoot particularly well, but I do think that this was a good holiday game. Had 12 assists, and obviously Porzingis being back was huge. Pritchard obviously had the great game. He was kind of the story of the game with 22 off the bench with 5 threes, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals. The guy that just, you can't talk about enough about just how good he's been this season. And it's not just the 3-point shooting. We talk about this all the time that, the 3-point shooting, it's always going to be there. Maybe it's some nights he'll be off, but it's like when it's on, it's like every shot's going in. But it just is awesome to see the continued progression in his game, with the rebounding, with the playmaking ability, with the defensive ability, that he's not just a shooter, not just a guy that comes off the bench to knock down threes. There are also many more parts to his game. I also thought the bigs off the bench had a good game. Keita gave you some good minutes. 13 minutes, 6 points. Cornette was really good at 10 points and 8 rebounds, really solid off the bench. Always great to see when you can see, those guys have good games off the bench, and it's not kind of the same old guys. Obviously, without Derek White, without Al Horford, the rotation was going to be a little bit different. Hauser started, Celtics gave 11 minutes to Shireman, who I thought played decently well, made a 3-pointer. I think that it's good to see the Celtics giving him opportunities to, develop as a player. I think in games like that, obviously Porzingis comes back. You want to kind of get him into rhythm. I think that's important before the playoffs. You have 14 games and really kind of want to work him up to speed. I think maybe there are some games that you'd like to see Torrey Craig get in there, but I think that this is a team that I think has guys to stay ready, that maybe they don't play every game, but they're ready to go. And Torrey Craig, I think, for example, is a guy that's bounced around in the NBA, played for a number of really good teams, and I think is always just, good when called upon. But I think good for the Celtics to get a win. I think they actually did have a good rebounding game as well. They also had 13 offensive rebounds, but the Celtics gave up 18, 10 of them to De'Ron Sharpe. So that was a little, frustrating. The Celtics kind of didn't do the best job at, defending the, not defending the glass, but like giving up offensive rebounds. So that wasn't too great. But the Celtics, I think, made enough plays to win. And I think that was the important thing to see in Friday's game against the Heat. That again, there were, some off shooting nights for a couple of guys. But I think ultimately, it was a great game from Jrue Holiday. 25 points, really did a great job of attacking the paint. Also knocked down five threes. So I thought he was key. Tatum, I think at times was really good in that game as well. Think it was Keita that I was impressed with on Friday, as he had eight rebounds in 23 minutes, had a cut a basket, or had two free throws, excuse me. And I thought that he was really good on the glass. So great to see, his continued development, and to see Joe Mazzulla and the coaching staff, trust him, which I think is great. Definitely tough loss against the Thunder on Wednesday. That was kind of, I was going to focus on that a little bit, that's a game that I think the Celtics come out of that should be a little bit disappointed, because I think didn't play as well as they should have. Jaylen Brown didn't play particularly well, and that was kind of tough to see because I feel like games like that he always gets up for. Just, one of those nights, unfortunately. Shot 5 for 15. I do think that Porzingis definitely would have made a bit of a difference in that game, but I think there are valid concerns about the way that Oklahoma City went about that game, establishing their physicality and, kind of, forcing the Celtics to pretty much take as many threes as they could. And I felt like they fell back, they fell kind of into that trap of shooting too many, Obviously, the Thunder allowed them to do that, but it just didn't seem like they played with enough force and kind of, not that they expected that that was going to be an easy game, but I think that yet again, they kind of, I don't want to say underestimated, but it's like Oklahoma City is a really good team. They play really physical, they play really tough, they have guys come off the bench that can knock down shots. Like, I think the Celtics are deep. I think they are as deep, if not deeper, than the Celtics with the guys that they can pull off the bench. So, I do think that it's, if they meet up in the finals, it will be a legitimate challenge for the Celtics. I don't think that it's going to be, not that any series would be easy, but I think that particular team, like, they're not going to mess around. And I think the Celtics have to be, at their absolute best. And unfortunately, I don't think they were on Wednesday. And it kind of was one of those games where you'd think that they would be able to come into a game at home and establish kind of the, like, not tempo, that's not the right word, but kind of establish that, the game belongs to them. You're in our house. Like, got to take it to an away team. I know that they lost this game, but the way that they went about it when Cleveland came in to the Garden a couple weeks ago, that you should come in and play like that and kind of tell this other team, this other potential, finals contender, that, you're not going to mess around. And I felt like they kind of allowed the Thunder to set the, know what the word is that I'm looking for here. It's kind of embarrassing, but like set the tempo of the game. I know that that's not the right word. I'm really struggling here, but you get the idea. Like, set the tone. Jeez, that's what I was looking for. The Thunder came in and set the tone, and it felt like the Celtics were kind of just reacting to it instead of being the aggressor and establishing, like, hey, you're in our building. You're not gonna be this comfortable. And I felt like The Thunder were comfortable in that game, and the Celtics didn't do a good enough job of making them uncomfortable. And it's just, you look at the way Gilgeous-Alexander plays, and it's always comfortable, it's always in control. And I felt like the Celtics didn't do a good enough job of making him feel their physicality and kind of be like, okay, you're not going to be able to do what you easily do. So, I think certainly a learning experience. And I think sometimes when you lose games like that, it can be good because it can kind of tell you that, okay, we got to kind of come in and approach a game, differently. So it will be very interesting to see if they do match up in the finals, what that looks like. But it's, let me tell you, it would be one heck of a series if they played in the finals. I know that people might be getting, delusions of grandeur thinking about, playing the Lakers and how crazy that would be. But I think them playing the Thunder would be a much, much better series if we're talking about, competitive basketball. So, next for the Celtics, they will host the Nets tomorrow night at 7:30, and then they are going on the road for a 7-game road trip, or six game road trip that starts Friday night in Utah, and then they are in Portland, and then next week they'll have trips to Sacramento, Phoenix, and San Antonio, and then they'll close the trip with Memphis on March 31st. But big road trip for the Celtics tonight in Brooklyn, and then in Utah and in Portland the rest of this week. So I think it's going to do it for the Celtics. Great to see Porzingis back in the lineup on Saturday. So that was definitely positive. So think that's going to do it. We're going to move on. Going to talk some Patriots. A couple more free agents that they brought in last week. Marcus Epps, who's a safety, recently played with the Raiders. So some more depth in that secondary. See if we can pull up those signings or that signing. And then they sign Wes Schweitzer, who's an offensive lineman. They signed him to a contract as well. Plays on the interior. So again, kind of adding to that depth. So Schweitzer played 90 games in his career, 62 starts. Can play center and guard, so pretty much an interior. We're beefing up that interior. So also has had some injuries. He has only played 10 games over the last 2 seasons and 2 starts. So he's had some injuries, but hopefully kind of just adds another body in there on the interior as the Patriots, obviously moved on from David Andrews. Be interesting to see Cole Strange in terms of the position that they see for him. Does he stay at guard? Does he play center? Has some experience playing that and was a center, I think, for a game or two at the end of last year when he came back. So kind of curious to see what the plan is for him. Schweitzer, I feel like maybe battle for a roster spot, could end up on the practice squad just as kind of an extra kind of experienced body. Marcus Epps had torn his ACL last season in week 3, so didn't play very many games, but is in his 7th season, 82 games, 45 starts. And the Celtics, or excuse me, Patriots wanting to bring in some more experience on that defense, I think will definitely compete for the roster spot at safety. Definitely some competition there. So Patriots, yeah, continue to make some moves primarily on the defense. Be curious to see what else they do offensively. A couple names come off the board. Cooper Kupp signed with the Seahawks this past week. So Patriots, I think, still looking for some receiver help, whether that's Stephon Diggs, Amari Cooper, Keenan Allen. I wouldn't be surprised if they looked into him. You know, obviously the news this morning that the Bengals are coming to terms with T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase obviously takes both of those guys off the board in terms of potential Patriot targets. I also think that Brandon Ayuk could possibly still be in play. The Patriots obviously tried to make a trade for him last offseason. They may still try to do that. But he is coming off a torn ACL, so wouldn't be surprised if, you know, maybe the Patriots don't go in that direction. They could. But I think still early in the offseason, still a lot of moves that can happen for sure, as we're, you know, still about a month and a half away from the draft. You know, a lot can change. You know, I know it's easy to, you know, get overly excited or disappointed about the things that they do in free agency, but remember, it's just a week old. There still are a lot of things that can happen. I do think that many things could change between now and the start of training camp or even the start of the regular season. You know, a lot of different things can happen. So, you know, I would pump the brakes if you're freaking out about the lack of, like, you know, star players that they're bringing in, or I don't know really what people expect, to be perfectly honest. Like, this retool, rebuild, whatever you want to call it, was always going to take time. And I feel like they're not just going to instantly become, you know, favorites. And it's also like, you know, you're not out here trying to, like, win free agency. It's like, that doesn't really always translate, you know. Sure, and they have spent a decent amount of money and brought in some guys that are helping the defense, but it's like, I don't know. I'm not sure what people kind of expect them to do, to be perfectly honest. It's like their areas that they needed to improve, they improved. And it's kind of just like, I feel like there are certain people that only care about what they do offensively. And it's like, yes, offense is important. Absolutely. You want to surround Drake May with talent. Absolutely. But there are, like, other parts of teams that are important too. You know, you can't sit here and, you know, say that the defense was fine last year, because it wasn't. It got a lot worse. And I feel like to beef up the defense makes a lot of sense. And it's like, I don't know. I don't know if this offense, you know, certainly they need some different guys to come in, but it's like, I feel pretty confident about how much better the defense is going to be. And the schedule that they're facing, I don't think is going to be too difficult. And I almost think if they just improve the defense, really improve the defense and improve the offense, you know, incrementally, like, they could still win 7 or 8 games and be right in the mix for a playoff spot, which I think even right now is not even that crazy to say. You know, and there's still a lot of work to be done for sure. I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but seriously, I think that this is a team that could legitimately challenge for contention. Not going to say that, oh, they're going to be a playoff team, but I think easily this team could win 6 or 7 games just based on what the roster looks like right now. And obviously, there's going to be time to improve it for sure. So, yeah, we'll keep you updated throughout the rest of free agency into the draft. Definitely getting to that time of year. We're going to be talking a lot about draft prospects. And, you know, I think be interesting to see what ends up happening for the Patriots at number 4. Do they think about trading? I think that's definitely in play. You know, I think unfortunately, he probably would have liked to pick higher in this draft. You know, I think, like, certainly, you know, winning that last game definitely had some consequences, you know, if you wanted to have a higher pick. But I think Patriots will get a good player in the first round, somebody that I think will help the roster immediately. So we'll look forward to that. Draft is at the end of April. So I think I'm gonna do it for the Patriots. Gonna move on and talk some Bruins. Unfortunately, could not build off of a couple or a huge win last week against the Panthers. Bruins have lost their last 2 games and really have not looked good And that's tough because I felt like watching that game against Florida Tuesday night, really was an exciting game. Really was a game that got you really pumped about this team, beating a Florida team that's been a thorn in their side for the last couple of years. So it was just great to see them pull together and play a great hockey game in the third period, come from behind and score three goals and get the win. And I think for a second, kind of made you believe in this team for a second, but in all too familiar fashion, Bruins lose back-to-back games and really just got smoked in both of those games. Really didn't look competitive. Defensively, just not good enough. And that's kind of how it's been all season. Now, obviously, they're playing with a patchwork defense as they've been playing with for a couple months now, but it just, not good enough play and just kind of a listless game Saturday night against Tampa Bay. A lot of boos coming down on this team. And then obviously Thursday night's loss in Ottawa that I think Bruins, I think with a better performance, have an opportunity to kind of throw themselves in the thick of the playoff chase, which is kind of what you thought was going to happen based on, Tuesday's win against Florida, which was great to watch. A lot of really good games. David Pastrnak was really good. I thought Zadorov was solid in that game, and Swayman obviously made some big saves, but kind of returned back to what we've seen all too often from this team is, inconsistencies defensively and offensively, just not being good enough. Had no shots on goal in that second period against Tampa Bay. I think it was no shot attempts either. So it was kind of just an ugly period and a team that I think, I don't know. I think that at this point, they're kind of just going through the motions and that kind of sucks because you watch the way that they played Saturday in Tampa, right after the deadline, playing with some juice, and then in the third period against Florida, and makes you think like, okay, like here we go, maybe we're, finding some momentum, and then it just, came crashing down, and unfortunately Swayman seems like he gets a whole lot of help, especially in the last two games, and it's just, hard to watch. It's been difficult to watch this team for the majority of the season, and I think just again, all too often you have these good performances that kind of just get wiped away when you play poorly in back-to-back games. So, Bruins now sitting directly at 500 at 30, 30, and 8 with 14 games left in the regular season to host the Buffalo Sabres tonight at 7 p.m. and then they will go on a 5-game road trip out on the West Coast that will take them to the end of the month. Play Vegas, San Jose, Los Angeles, and Anaheim. So Bruins will be busy this week with four games. Buffalo at Vegas, at San Jose, at Los Angeles. But I do obviously want to highlight some good things too. I don't want to sit here and just talk about the negatives that I feel like we've kind of been talking about the same old negatives all season. But I do think some of the new guys that the Bruins have brought in seem to have assimilated fairly well. I think Casey Mittelstadt has looked pretty good. Husnadinov, I think, has looked really, really good, a really crafty player that I think the Bruins, giving him more opportunities, he might have something there. I think that more of a skill guy than, Lauko. Lauko is kind of more of an energy fourth line type, and I don't think that, he should necessarily be playing second or third line minutes, but I think that he's a good guy to have around, good locker room guy, and I think good to have a person back that I think the guys just like having around. So I think, that's at least a positive, but it has been nice to see, Mittelstadt, I think, record a point in his first three games with the Bruins, and then Husnadinov has scored in the last two games. So that's been good to see. So it's like at least some of the guys they brought in, they can feel good about. Kind of curious about the rest of the season with 14 games left, you know, what happens with Mercurov and Lysell? Do the Bruins bring them up for a game or two? You know, Fraser Minton, who the Bruins acquired from the Maple Leafs in the Carlo trade, had a hat trick yesterday for Providence. You know, I know that those guys are important to the Providence team, you know, playoffs, but I do think that it wouldn't hurt to get a couple of those guys up here in Boston just to see what they can do, you know, maybe at end of the season type of deal that they play the last couple of games of the season. But I think, you know, it should be a discovery period where you're playing some of those guys and not playing, you know, Patrick Brown or guys in the middle six that really are not important to your future. You know, I feel like rather be playing some of those young kids, but, you know, I don't know. I sometimes wonder where the priorities are with this front office, where it's like AHL playoffs, like I don't know if it's really that important, you know, especially for a guy like Mercurov, who's like, I feel like should be not playing in the AHL, but, you know, I don't know. Maybe I don't know better. I don't know. I just feel like it's odd that we've not seen more of him, that we've not really seen any of Lysell. And, you know, Patra, I think, has kind of struggled in his time up here in Boston from time to time this year, I think, with the physicality and everything. And I do think, like, him being in Providence maybe isn't the worst thing for him. But I do kind of think at a certain point, you got to recognize that you're out of the playoffs or out of the playoff chase and you're not going to make it. And it's just like, you kind of like to see some of those other younger guys to see what they can do, because, like, I don't know, like, this is an off season where, you know, I think it's going to be pretty important to kind of figure out what you have. But it's like, if you're not playing Lysell, if you're not playing Mercurov, it's like, how do you figure out if they're a part of your future going forward if you're not going to play them? So just is just still weird to me that we're still doing this. And it's like very clearly that this team is not going to go to the playoffs and really respectfully doesn't have a lot to play for. And I don't want to say that, you know, overtly negatively, because obviously I still do believe in certain guys wanting to kind of finish out the rest of this season, playing for pride and not giving up and kind of still playing hard, which is why, like, it was great to see the Bruins play as well as they did in the third period on Tuesday night. I think that was awesome to see the guys kind of still give a damn and still care. And, you know, it was great to see Pastrnak playing as well. And it's really been awesome to see him continue to play at a high level and take on more of a leadership role. And I think, like, legitimately has done so much for this team this year to even keep them in, you know, keep them in the illusion of contention. So, you know, I think he deserves a lot of credit around here for keeping this team as afloat as he has. And I think has improved with his leadership and really still wanting to kind of keep things alive. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he's a guy that gets talked about to be that next captain of the team. Really wouldn't surprise me. So I think rest of the season, rest of the week, you know, you just kind of look for little victories and little things. You know, it was a really great play that Andrew Peak made in the first period in Saturday's game, where he kind of took a pass, you know, skated through the neutral zone into the offensive zone, set up Elias Lindholm for a goal. It was a really, really nice play. And you've seen him do things like that, kind of jump into the play offensively and be able to, you know, impact a play like that. So it was really great to see that. So it's like, sure, the season's been disappointing and the rest of the season's probably going to be hard to watch, but I think it also is important to identify good things like that when plays like that happen. And I do think that Peak is a guy that's had a pretty solid season in a season where I think there's been a lot of guys that have not, you know, played great, a lot of inconsistency, but feel like he's been a pretty solid part of the Bruins team this year, which is great to see and hope that he is a guy that sticks around beyond the rest of his contract. So as I said, Bruins will host the Sabres tonight, and then they will go out west, have games in Vegas Thursday night, San Jose on Saturday, and the Kings on Sunday, all late night games. Bruins will return home April 1st against Washington. Alex Ovechkin getting closer and closer to that record goal scoring margin, so wouldn't be surprised if he comes into that game a goal or two shy of the record. That would be pretty awesome if he broke that record in Boston. That would be pretty neat. But yeah, I think take a look at the standings for the Bruins later in the podcast. So we'll get to the Revolution, who finally got on the scoreboard on Saturday night in New York against NYCFC, but could not get the point as NYC got the go-ahead goal in the 68th minute. So Revolution dropping another 2-1, 0-1-3 on the season at their third loss in a row, as they've been unable to really muster much offensively. The only goal that they did get on Saturday was an own goal in the 26th minute. And then NYC evened it up in the 38th minute and then scored in the 68th minute to get the win. So I think the Revs just continue to struggle offensively. The good news was they did have a pretty decided advantage in possession, 54% to 46%, but really couldn't do much with it with only one shot on goal and seven shot attempts, compared to four shots on goal and 10 shot attempts for NYCFC. So, I think, unfortunately for this Revs team, not really coming together offensively as I think they would like. Obviously Campana missed this game with an injury. Maximiliano Arruti played in the striker spot to start the game and then was subbed out for Luis Diaz, or subbed out for Langone in the second half. Didn't really provide much of a spark. It was pretty much largely, I think, the same lineup from the game before. Matt Polster that was in the starting lineup this time for this game for the first time this season. You saw Noel Buch for the first time this season as well, which is good to see him on the field. But the Revs, I still think, working through a lot of new guys. Obviously, as we've talked about, it's a lot of new players, but at a certain point you need to see results. Revs have one goal in the season, and it was an own goal. And so it's just, they got to be better. Like, not that I'm sitting here expecting that they were going to be top of the Eastern Conference or anything, but you have to see progress. And I think, unfortunately, it's kind of just the way things go around here, that the season, they're just typically a slow starting team. And it just is frustrating that it just seems like you're not seeing progress game to game. It's like, sure, you got a goal this time in this game, but it's just offensively, there's just a lot of nothing. There's a lot of things just not happening. And so it's frustrating because I think came into the season with some excitement of like, okay, they've brought in a number of different guys, and you expect things to be a little bit different, but kind of just more of the same. So you hope that this week break helps the Revolution. I think there's an international break, so there's no game this weekend. They'll return to action March 29th against the New York Red Bulls at 2:30 at home. So hopefully some time off kind of helps them regroup, maybe gives time for Campana to come back into the lineup. But I think for this team, it's just like you got to see some production. You got to see a result, on this next game, because you're going on the road to play some tough teams, Cincinnati and Atlanta, the next two games. So really a huge opportunity for the Revs to get a result, at home. And I think you hope that they can kind of figure things out offensively, because I really think that's what's letting them down. And I think at a certain point, the defense and the goaltending can only do as well as they can. But it's like the offense can't score goals. You're basically asking that area to be perfect. And, they've been pretty solid, the defense, and Ivicic, I think, has been good. But it's just like he needs to have some support if this team is gonna, have any semblance of doing anything this season. And I kind of feel like, I don't want to say they're running out of time. It's only four games in, but it's kind of like you kind of need to be able to start picking up points and start to be able to kind of see some progress offensively, which, unfortunately, they are not seeing. So I think it's going to do it for the Revs. Move on and talk some NBA. The Magic with the win yesterday over the Cavaliers, ending the Cavs' 16-game winning streak. Jalen Brunson is expected to be out for another 1 to 2 weeks for the Knicks. And we will take a look at the schedule tonight on St. Patrick's Day. Quite a few games. 7:30 on ESPN, you have the Heat and the Knicks. Possible playoff matchup there. Wouldn't be surprised. Then you have the Sixers and the Rockets at 8. Pacers and the Timberwolves. Pistons and the Pelicans also at 8. At 9 o'clock, Chicago and Utah. 10 o'clock on ESPN, Denver and Golden State. And then 10 o'clock, Toronto and Phoenix. Memphis and Sacramento. Washington and Portland. And then at 10:30, Lakers and the Spurs. So taking a look at the standings, Cavaliers in first in the East, firmly in first, 7.5 games ahead of the Celtics. And then the Celtics are firmly in second, 6 games ahead of the Knicks. And the Knicks firmly in third, 4.5 games ahead of the Bucks, who are in fourth. And then followed by the Pacers and the Pistons. Does kind of look like that top six in the East is going to be pretty much decided, with the Hawks in the play-in as the 7 seed, 5 games back of the Pistons. So kind of looks like that top six in the East is going to be set. So in the play-in spots, you have the Hawks in the 7 seed, Magic in the 8 seed, Heat the 9 seed, and then the Bulls the 10 seed, with Toronto 3.5 back, or 4.5 back of the final play-in spot held by the Bulls. In the Western Conference, Oklahoma City now leads the West by 13 games over Houston, Denver, and Memphis, all with the same record. Houston in second, Denver in third, Memphis in fourth, and then the Lakers are fifth, Warriors are sixth. And then in the play-in spots, 7 to 10, you have Minnesota, the Clippers, the Kings, and the Mavericks, with the Suns 1.5 games back of that final play-in spot. As we're getting kind of close toward the end of the season, as Celtics have 14 games left on the season, as they are 49-19. In the NHL, Alex Ovechkin is now 8 goals away from breaking the all-time goal-scoring record set by Wayne Gretzky. The Golden Knights coming to terms with their goalie Adin Hill on a new contract, 6 years for $37.5 million overall. And we're going to take a look at the schedule. So there are 5 games on the schedule, including the Bruins and the Sabres, Philadelphia and Tampa, New Jersey and Columbus also playing at 7, and then Calgary and Toronto at 7:30, and the Kings and the Wild at 8. So we'll take a look at the standings here. In the Atlantic, Florida still on top with 85 points, and then followed by Tampa Bay and Toronto, both with 81 points. The Metro of Washington leading with 96 points, by far the most in the Eastern Conference. And then you have Carolina in second with 86 points, and the Devils in third with 78 points. In the wild card, Ottawa strengthening their hold on that first wild card spot with 77 points. They've won six in a row, 7 of 10. And the Rangers in that second wild card spot with 72 points. Montreal just a point back of a playoff spot. Columbus, Detroit, 2 points back. And then the Bruins are 4 points back currently in the east of that final playoff spot, with also Bruins at 14 games to go. In the Western Conference, Winnipeg leading the Central with an NHL high 98 points. And then they are followed by the Stars with 87 points and Colorado with 85. In the Pacific, Vegas leads with 86. Edmonton second with 82, and the Kings third with 81. And then in the wild card spot, the Wild 79 points, Vancouver 73. And then St. Louis is even in points. Calgary and Utah 2 points back of the final playoff spot. We'll take a look at some MLB notes. Spring training games going on. Mookie Betts is out for the Tokyo series for the Dodgers. I think that starts next week. The Dodgers will be playing a series in Tokyo, so he is out for that series. Joey Gallo is cut by the White Sox and is eyeing a switch to pitching, which is kind of interesting there. And yeah, I think that's most of what we got for MLB. NFL obviously mentioned the extensions that the Bengals have reached with T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase. Derek Stingley, his father is Darryl Stingley. Derek Stingley reaching a 3-year extension with the Texans that makes him the highest paid defensive back in history. The 49ers and Kyle Juszczyk are reuniting after he was released last week. The Falcons are keeping Kirk Cousins, and the Ravens adding Cooper Rush as a backup quarterback to Lamar Jackson. So I think that's probably do it for the sports this week. We got a new top five for you. Now, obviously, it's St. Patrick's Day, and you're probably all expecting me to do a St. Patrick's Day themed top five, but honestly, couldn't really find things to rank. I didn't think that I'd come up with anything good. So last week, obviously, was March 14th, which is Pi Day for the people that are, really into math. So I figured might be a fun top five to rank my top five pies. So definitely, pies are good. I definitely wouldn't say they're like my absolute favorite dessert, but tried a couple and I think I got a pretty good top five for you here. I got a number one that might surprise some people. So we'll get into it. I'm going to start at number five, work our way down to number one. So number five is blueberry. Only have had it a couple times. Really solid, gets the job done. Nothing too crazy, but I think it's a good pie that kind of always delivers. Not really too much else to say other than it's kind of like a old reliable and gets the job done. Number four, strawberry rhubarb. Just recently tried this within the last year. Pretty good, I'm not gonna lie. A little bit more of an interesting flavor, so I think that's a pretty good number four. A little bit different than the typical blueberry, not as sweet. But it gets the job done. So a little bit more of a interesting flavor profile at number four. So Now, number three, this is where things might start to get a little controversial. Apple is number three for me. Nothing wrong with it. Obviously, it's, I think the most American pie on this list. But I would say, honestly, like, I find myself that I like apple crisp more than apple pie. I just feel like apple pie is kind of sometimes hard to get right. So I think for me, it's not. Doesn't nearly deliver all the time as much as this number two pie delivers pretty much every time for me, and that's pumpkin pie. I think that pumpkin pie is one of the absolute best desserts on the planet. Really can't go wrong with it. Love having it around the holidays, Thanksgiving especially. There's, something seriously wrong with you if you do not have pumpkin pie available for Thanksgiving dessert. So I would say that's definitely number two for me. Number one, it's got to be key lime pie. I know that might be a crazy take, but especially for somebody up north, but love the taste. Really just can't go wrong. I don't think I've ever met a key lime pie that I didn't like. So I would say that's my number one. Pretty clear number one. Pumpkin pie obviously is awesome, of course, but key lime pie definitely can't go wrong there. So those are my top five. I think could have included ice cream pie in there, but I feel like, I don't know, I had a hard time putting it in there. Obviously it's a great pie because you can get really versatile with it, but I don't know if I would consider it a pie. Kind of had a hard time thinking of that, but I think those are good top five. Obviously, would be curious about other people's top five, but that's what I got for you folks this week, and we'll keep you updated in terms of the March Madness preview that will come out later this week. Really looking forward to that. So have that to look forward to and enjoy all the madness later this week. But we'll talk to you before then.